This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome to the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick. You probably know Andy Borowitz from his column in The New Yorker, The Borowitz Report. And he's been writing satire and humor for decades. He started out in the world of sitcoms.
As a sitcom writer, you need characters that you can throw stuff to every week, week in, week out, who are dependable and will get the laugh. And politicians become kind of this little sitcom cast because we know how they're going to behave. We know that Rudy Giuliani is going to be a crazy drunk guy, and Marjorie Taylor Greene is going to talk about Jewish space lasers. And so they become very reliable sources of comedy.
It's probably not surprising at all that Andy ended up writing about politics. But his new book, while funny, is not really satire. It's called Profiles in Ignorance. And Andy believes we're now living at a time that some of our smartest, most educated politicians are actually just pretending to be dumb in order to get elected. Andy, welcome. The book is hilarious. I have to say, the subtitle of the book is How America's Politicians Got Dumb and Dumber. And it's mostly about, obviously, modern politicians. Were there no dummies early on?
No, there were. Apparently, this whole trend of dumbing down of politicians started during the 17th century. What happened in the 17th century was that the Puritans were big readers. They mainly read one book, but they were big readers.
It was a good book.
It was an excellent book. And then a bunch of Dutch revivalists came in, and they started being much more theatrical and writhing on the floor and hollering and yelling and all this stuff. And so they quickly upstaged the Puritans. And we've been sort of reenacting that ever since, where we like politicians who can perform over politicians who know stuff.
What would you say is the zenith of politicians who know stuff? I assume it's the Enlightenment period and the period of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution and things like that.
Yes, I think that's true. And as a result, none of those guys are in my book because they're not funny. I focused really on the last 50 years. And the reason why I did that, it wasn't totally arbitrary, which was that the last 50 years was when TV got into the mix and really started with the Kennedy-Nixon debates.
Now, my point is this. Senator Kennedy has got to be consistent here. Either he's for the president and he's against the position that those who oppose the president in 55...
Two guys, by the way, who were both well-informed. The problem was Kennedy was much better on TV than Nixon. He had much better hair. And that really sort of started the trend of politicians needing to have good hair whenever possible. So you got people like Rod Blagojevich and John Edwards, who had other
fantastic
problems.
Fantastic hair. Blagojevich had fantastic hair.
The best hair. The
ever.
Best hair. But what really happened with that debate was it taught people a lesson, and it was kind of a dangerous lesson, which is it's important for politicians to be good on TV. And Republicans in California kind of reverse engineered this, and they said, rather than finding a politician like Nixon, who's well-informed but loses the gubernatorial election because he's horrible on TV, let's find somebody who's great on TV and doesn't know anything, but we can fill him with knowledge. And that's how we got Governor Ronald Reagan.
You've heard a great deal about my lack of experience. That's true. Lack of experience actually in holding public office. But I know that there comes some times when if you want a job done, maybe you get somebody in who hasn't found out all the things you can't do.
The start of the book, in some sense, is Ronald Reagan's ascent.
Yes, yes. He is the towering icon of ignorance in this story. And this is one thing I should say about the book is nothing in this book is just my opinion. It's very documented. It's facts. It's not me just calling people names. I don't call people idiots. Mm-hmm. I will call them ignoramus, because that is actually a technical term. And ignoramus is somebody who doesn't know things.
But is it possible to argue that this enterprise, this discussion, is conservatives equals ignorant and liberal and to the left it means enlightened somehow? And one can only imagine that certain listeners listening to this see this as an exercise in left-leaning snobbery or condescension.
That is a great question. I think that this issue of anti-intellectualism has really affected both parties. So Bill Clinton's a great example. Extremely well-educated guy, extremely full of knowledge. But when he first ran in 1992, there was a lot of concern that he was too wonky and too nerdy because he had gone to Yale Law School and he'd been a Rhodes Scholar and had gone to Oxford. And the Democrats had a really bad record of nominating these guys who were considered eggheads. So by the time Clinton came around, this was a concern. And his way of addressing it, rather than owning how smart he was, is he started doing Elvis imitations. And he went on the Arsenio Hall show and put on Ray-Bans and played Heartbreak Hotel on the sax. And he was basically saying, hey, look, I'm not really that smart. Right. And that was supposed to be a good thing.
Talking about what kind of underwear he wore.
Yeah, exactly. He, on MTV, boxers or briefs. So it wasn't like the Democrats looked at this anti-intellectual trend and said, we'll have none of that. They eventually succumbed. And really, both Barack Obama and Bill Clinton, when they were looking for a political role model for their presentation, how to make their argument as a candidate, they looked to Ronald Reagan, one of the least informed presidents in American history. So the least informed president became a role model for some of our most egg-heady politicians.
Andy, you describe the last 50 years of American politics as the age of ignorance, and you divide it into three stages: ridicule, acceptance, and celebration.
Yeah, to summarize, in ridicule, dumb politicians pretended to be smart. In the acceptance phase, George W. Bush, dumb politicians could be proud of being dumb. And then we have people like Josh Hawley, who's extremely well-educated and extremely smart, and they are part of what I would call the celebration phase of ignorance, which is they are smart guys pretending to be dumb because it helps them electorally.
That's Tom Cotton is another, it seems.
Tom Cotton, Ted Cruz. I mean, there's a whole lot of them.
So along comes Donald Trump. Need I say more? And where does he fit in all of this?
Well, what was interesting in researching the book was that, you know, when Trump was elected, a lot of us supposedly knowledgeable people were taken by surprise by this. It just seemed unfathomable, and it was like just such a sock in the gut. But the more I researched the past 50 years, the more likely, plausible, and maybe even inevitable his election was, because he actually had a great deal in common with his forebears. But I think with him, it was more, I think the thing that was different about him was that he was really the icon of the celebration phase, in that his ignorance and his ability to make up facts and to say really recklessly dumb things like we should all ingest bleach.
Right, and then I see the disinfectant where it knocks it out in a minute, 1 minute. And is there a way we can do something like that by injection inside? Or
that became sort of a tribal banner that people wanted to wave. The notion that you had somebody who was saying things that were so ill-informed.
I somehow remember, and it seemed hilarious at the time, but it seems like almost nothing now, that the Vice President of the United States, Dan Quayle, visited a classroom. And he, I think, corrected a school kid's spelling of the word potato, but unfortunately, Quayle got it wrong.
Yeah, this happened in 1992, towards the end of his vice presidency, and he was in a middle school classroom, and actually the kid in question was named William Figueroa. The word he had to spell was potato, and Dan Quayle said, you've almost got it right there. You need to add a little something at the end.
And add a one little bit on the end. Just think of potato. How's it?
He hectored the kid into adding an E, thus disfiguring his correctly spelled word. And that really became the thing. That's the thing that he's best known for. And Trump misspelled things on Twitter about once every 5 days when he was still allowed on Twitter.
Late last night, the president tweeted, despite the constant negative press, kefefe.
And it never became an issue at all.
There's been no shortage of comic writing about this. But at the same time, it doesn't embarrass Donald Trump to misspell a word every 2 seconds on Twitter. I distinctly remember him saying, by way of compliment, I love the uneducated.
Right.
Where are my uneducated people? This kind of thing. And that's not to say that people who have not had the advantage of an advanced education or a fine one should be looked down on. In fact, I think Trump scorns them as much as he scorns anybody, but is able to use it to his political advantage, is able to use the comedy about him to his political advantage, too. So what's to be done about this?
Well, you know, this might be my cockeyed optimism. I am an optimistic person, actually, and I'm a little bit of an idealist. And I do think that history doesn't move in a straight line. I think we've been in a very dumb period. The last 50 years have been trending dumbwards, clearly. But there's some hopeful signs. I thought it was really interesting that the good people of Alaska decided that they'd had enough of Sarah Palin. I think that Sarah Palin's status as a national joke really finally caught up with her. And I think it was a contributing factor. I think that there are other things about Sarah Palin that were a turn off to people. The fact that she quit halfway through her term as governor probably didn't help her.
I guess I feel after a while that the times are such, and it's different from this sort of high moment of Jon Stewart and some other, that it's not always funny anymore. You know, that, you know, these conspiracy theories and space, Jewish space lasers and the things that come out of Trump's mouth and Ted Cruz's mouth, which would have, in a different context, seemed hilarious, now seem just dangerous. You ever feel that way?
I think it's both, really. I mean, I feel like this might be a manifestation of my cockeyed optimism, but I love this Will Rogers quote, and I quote it in the book, where Will Rogers said, there's no trick to being a political humorist when you have the whole government working for you. And I feel that we've lived through really terrible times in this country, which in retrospect, they're in the midst of time now, in the midst of the past. So we don't, we're not living them viscerally anymore. But the McCarthy era was an era of conspiracy theories, and a lot of people's lives were ruined. It wasn't just a question of somebody tweeting out a nasty, mean tweet. It was entire careers were ruined. And, you know, the early 1950s through the 1960s was a time where we were living on the precipice of nuclear annihilation. That wasn't really fun either. And yet people still, George Carlin was making jokes. And
Dr. Strangelove was made.
Yeah. I mean, every now and then people will say things like Tom Lehrer, the comedy songwriter, famously said that satire died when Henry Kissinger won the Nobel Peace Prize. I get his point, but I just don't think it ever dies, because I think we've always lived in absurd, terrible times, some less terrible than others. But we find a way to laugh because it's really our survival, I think.
Andy Borowitz, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Andy Borowitz's new book is called Profiles in Ignorance.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.